Pat O'Driscoll, Fine Gael, Cork East constituency, Athcormac. McMahon, you were previously elected as Cork County Councillor in 2009 for Fermoy and Mitchelstown. Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, I'm very well, how are you?
Very good indeed, and thanks for taking time to talk to us today as well. Obviously, the election coming up in a couple of weeks, really, and tell us about how things have been for you over the past year, you know, things that you've been working on.
Yeah, well, I was selected about 18 months ago, and for the last 18 months, I have been out on the road canvassing. I'm working as a post-primary teacher, so most of it has been in evenings and weekends. Going around, listening to people, really, having a conversation, and seeing what issues are arising in the constituency. And from that then, I have brought forward, I suppose, as kind of priorities that I would like to achieve if I'm elected as a TD. It's been very enjoyable, because, in fairness, most people are very engaging in place, and we've only got, 12 days left now, so not long at all, no.
Not long, so you've been very busy so far as well. So now, looking at Cork East itself, you know, it's going to be a tight race there as well, with 4 seats available and 4 sitting TDs as well. So it's going to be very, very tight. Tell us what your vision is for Cork East.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, it is all about getting the number one votes. We have 4 incumbent TDs all standing, all with strong profiles, and we also have, I suppose, candidates like myself who are not sitting TDs who have strong profiles. So it will be very tough. My own priorities, I suppose, I'm, as you said, I'm a Athcormac man living above in Fermoy, and I would like to be a voice for the constituency. I think we're lacking that, a strong voice at a national level. I'm a teacher by background, so I would love to see more investment in the physical infrastructure of education. So I'm talking about schools, permanent classrooms, PE halls, science labs. There have been a number of issues regarding overpopulation of schools in the constituency. I suppose most notably down in Carrick, Toole and Middleton. You've also had it in Buttevant, you have it in Mallow, you have it in Fermoy. And those are issues that should have been dealt with well before they arose. It's a simple issue of demographics. We know that there's a bulge coming through the primary school sector, and yet we haven't provided for the post-primary places. I'd also, I suppose, I'm focusing on developing the tourism market. East Cork has a very strong tourism market with Spike Island, so that was opened while I was a county councillor. The distillery and the Greenway, but I also would like to see, I suppose, stretching across the whole constituency in North Cork as well, developing a tourism market there, that it would complement each other, and people, I suppose, who are travelling to North Cork will be travelling to East Cork and vice versa. Agriculture is important too. I mean, there's a lot of farming families who are struggling, especially if they're on beef and tillage. The margins are very, very small. The dairy sector is strong at the moment, but as we know, it's volatile because it's dependent on the world market. So I would, I suppose, because East Cork, the Cork East constituency, is such a strong agricultural area, dairying, beef and tillage, that I would obviously be working with the representative organisations of those bodies to ensure that there are sustainable family farm incomes going into the future.
It is vitally important for those regions and those agricultural areas as well. Now, I think it was John Paul Phelan who said the Cork East constituency is crucial to Fine Gael, and if you don't take 2 seats, you may not win the next general election. How true is that?
Absolutely 100% true. Fine Gael, we don't have a strong history of taking 2 seats in the constituency, but when we have done it, it has always been when Fine Gael grows nationally. So 1997 and 2011 were the last two times that we won 2 seats, and they were both when Fine Gael was strong. The reality is that across Cork, if we don't pick up 3 seats in the 5 Cork constituencies, we won't be returning to government, and that's a reality. So obviously that's why I was chosen so early in the race, and why I put in such a strong campaign over the last 18 months. I think Fine Gael as a party has done a lot of good over the last 9 years, particularly as regards the economy, bringing unemployment down from 16.5% down to 4.5%. We finally have returned to a balanced budget and even a surplus back in October. And I think the Fine Gael government have done very well handling the Brexit issue. It's a serious challenge for this country. We don't have full control. We don't have control of it. But the Simon Coveney in particular and Helen McEntee have done a great job in representing the country's interests in the Brexit negotiations. So those things have been done. There are challenges, but I think you need a strong government to tackle those challenges, and I think Fine Gael would be the best party to lead that government.
So if we're doing so well in the economy, how come many people are not feeling it in their pockets?
Because of taxation. The reality was that back in 2009 and 10, in the last administration, when the economy collapsed, the then ministers for finance, Brian Lennon and Brian Campbell, Brian Lennon in particular, brought in taxation measures, including the universal social charge, as a temporary measure. It has still not been removed because...
Why didn't Fine Gael remove it?
Because for eight of our nine major deficits, you can't invest in social services and in infrastructure if you're on the So therefore, we have committed to reducing tax burden and middle income. But that will take time. I mean, it can't be done in one budget. It will be done over a series of budgets. But we are committed to doing it because, as you said, people don't have a lot of a disposable income, and that hurts the local economy.
Now, you also said that Fine Gael can be proud of its achievements in government as well. So two of the really big issues, I guess, in Ireland today is the lack of will or desire to fix the housing and homeless problem and the health issues as well. So can we just go on to the housing issues and where you see the problems and what fixes you see?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's a lack of willingness to fix it. I think there's a strong willingness to fix it. In the last 3 years, the number of planning decisions made in regards of housing have doubled. Number two, the amount of social houses being built by the local authorities has increased. We're building more now than we have in the last 10 years. Cannot turn on and turn off construction like a tap. When the economy collapsed 10 years ago...
It doesn't take 9 years or 11 years to turn on a tap, though. You know me.
I was going to say that 11 years ago when it collapsed, it was because of a housing bubble. There was an housing prices had increased dramatically. We had a fall in the population, so therefore there was actually an oversupply of housing, people in the country. Then in the last 3 to 4 years, that there's been a return to demand for housing. Labor. Number two, the shortage of available land developers can actually develop. And of course, the local authorities had not been used to building houses for the last 15 years. So all of those things took time to bring back up to a level that we need. As I said, there were 21,000 houses last year, and social housing, the output has increased dramatically. We have 100 houses, social houses being built in Tramore at the moment. There are 68 being built in Mull at the moment. They will change the housing market in those towns, and that's what we need to continue to do. The desire is there to do it, but it's not simple. I would predict that in the next 5 years, that the issue will, that whoever is in government will be on top of that issue, because they're on the right trajectory at the moment.
So if I look at, for argument's sake, who builds those houses, be it a developer, private developer, or be it through the local council and using their bank of land as well, what's the preferred way for Fine Gael to do that?
I think you have to have a mix. The social houses have to be built because there's a lot of people whose incomes just won't allow them ever to own or to buy a house. So there has to be social housing done through the local authorities. There has to be more private housing built. The problem is an awful lot of it is not affordable to people, say, who have a gross salary of less than €60,000, including myself in that bracket. There are serious challenges in providing affordable houses for those people. Because of the housing regulations and standards today, it's costing on average about €220,000 to build a three-bedroom semi-detached. And that's not affordable to people who have €60,000.
And who built it for €220,000?
And developed. Market today will tell you that it costs about €220,000 to build a three bedroom semi-detached.
Well, if I look at the figures from the Irish Chartered Surveyors Society, they're saying that the average privately built three bedroom semi-detached house is €330,000, and one built through the council using their bank of land is €150,000. That's a bit of a disparity from what you said.
I was told by developers that it costs €220,000 to build a house, three bedrooms and attached.
No, well, I'm only plucking figures from the Irish Chartered Surveyors Association.
Where did they say it would cost that?
In a recent report they issued, €330,000.
Where in the country?
Oh, Dublin.
In Dublin, but so we're talking about Cork East here.
Yeah, I know, yeah. That's an average across the country.
Cost of land is much greater in Dublin. You can't compare Dublin.
Sorry. That is an average across the land.
An average across the land, but we're talking about North Cork. We're not talking on East Cork. We're not talking about costing 200,000 to 240,000 to build a three-bedroom family house in North and East Cork at the moment.
Fine, 220,000. It's still unobtainable for many, many people.
It is. That's why the state has to intervene and build more for it. I suppose subsidise the building of houses. But that is it. That's a big cost. I mean, if you're going to say that an affordable house is built at 150,000, then that means the state has to chip in somewhere between the region of 70,000 to 100,000 per house. And that is a large cost. Should the state do it? Yes, but I think that's something that will have to be done in time.
Now, one of the other main issues, of course, is the health issues as well. Now we have record numbers on trolleys, waiting lists, etc., and massive understaffing and overcrowding at emergency departments. How can we tackle that?
Well, all parties have agreed to this launch a care policy. There is a capacity issue within the system. We need a new hospital in Cork. They're currently looking for a site for it. My preferred choice would be up in the Southeast Court site on the north side of the city, because we have a land bank there that's owned by the state, and it would be accessible. Unless you start tackling the capacity issue, which is opening a new hospital, opening new beds, then you're not going to tackle the trolley crisis. We also need more step-down facilities. There are people in hospital who are discharged who can't leave hospital because they can't go home, but there are no facilities for them to step down to in terms of community hospitals and nursing homes. So that has to be increased as well. But the reality is that we put in $17 billion last year into healthcare. It is a very, very expensive sector of state support. And the reality is, you asked me earlier about taxation. You said that taxation, people are feeling that they're spending too much, but at the same time, people are expecting services. So you have to find that balance. The reality is that healthcare is very, very expensive, but we have to start building more capacity. But that will take time again.
And by putting that money into the health service, you're going to alleviate a lot of problems as well, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's across the whole sector. It's not just, as I said, it's step-down facilities. It's putting into GP practices at a local level that you don't... I mean, people should be... I suppose the first protocol is your local primary provider, which is GPs and pharmacies, rather than people going directly into the A&E services. But once they're in the A&E, once they're inside the hospital, once they're discharged, they should be able to go into a step-down facility if they can't go home.
And receive wraparound treatment and care.
Exactly.
Moving on to the, another... I don't know, it's a bit of a sore point really with many, many public at the moment, the pension age up to 67 and then obviously up to 68 in 2028.
Yeah.
Why are we doing that?
The population is, I mean, the average today, if you're born in Ireland in the mid-80s, that wasn't the case 20 years ago, not 40 years ago when the pension age was put at 65, where people weren't living as long back then. It's an unfortunate fact that people will have to work longer. I mean, my retirement age, I mean, as you said, after 2028, my pension age will be 68.
So, we were talking about the pensions and why it's gone up to 68, and you were saying that...
Look, the demographics of the country are changing. People are living longer, and the percentage of the population over 65 is increasing. So the cost of providing pensions will increase dramatically over the next 10, 20 years, and the state just won't be able to afford it. I know people would like to retire at 65, and some will, but my retirement age will be 68, probably higher by the time I get to it, because simply people are living longer. And we need to start providing for that. I know that the government brought in mandatory enrolment, or bring in mandatory enrolment for private pensions. And that is a positive thing, because people need to start planning for retirement, especially if they want to retire at an earlier age. There is, of course, a problem that some people in their contracts, they can't work beyond 65, so that has to be resolved first. You can't expect people to retire at 65 but tell them that they don't have a pension until 67, so that has to be resolved in a way that people aren't left hanging. But overall, the reality is that as people age longer, or live longer, people will have to work longer because they still won't be able to provide pensions for everybody.
Now, as you mentioned there as well, people, you know, may be forced contractually to retire at 65,
yes,
and then presumably then they're going to have to go on to job seekers or something like that,
yeah,
there to make up the difference. So how can they You know, I mean, they were expecting to retire. I mean, the pension isn't a gift. You know, it's a right. They've paid into it all their working life. And here they are. They find themselves probably shortchanged as well for a couple of years.
Yeah, well, my own father had to do the same. I mean, he retired. He was contractually obliged to
retire. But that doesn't make it right.
But I know it doesn't make it right. But, I mean, they are, as you said, signing on to job seekers. And now Regina Doherty has announced that there is going to be a transition period from 66 to 67. But the reality is that these are only stopgap measures. We won't be able to afford to provide pensions for everybody at the age of that's devastating.
But I mean, we took in 2010 there was 20 billion taken out of the pension pot and given to the banks, and now the banks are still sitting pretty. They're not paying tax. Well, there's 20
they're
billion.
Paying tax. The banks are paying tax.
No, AIB, weren't they excused from paying the tax?
The banks, well, first of all, of course, the banks are owned by us. In the sense of the majority of both Bank of Ireland and AIB are owned by the state. And whenever the market is right to sell those shares, the state will be recouping an awful lot of that money. But it can't be put into a pension pot, as you call it, because the state has debts of over 206 billion at this stage. So my view is that whatever we take back from the selling of those banks will have to go into paying down the debt, because all we need now is for interest rates on the world market to increase, and suddenly what we're paying back on those debts will increase. We're currently paying about 7 billion a year on interest alone, so we need to try and bring down that debt. So when we do sell off the banks, it is going to have to go into reducing that debt. And the reality of it is that people are living longer, and I would love to say people should retire at 65. I won't be able to. I'll be retiring at 68 at the earliest. That's just the reality of an ageing population.
Well, where do you stand on climate change?
Well, sure, every political party knows that there needs to be actions taken as regards to climate change. Every political party. Nobody can ignore it anymore. We're going to burn ourselves off the planet if we don't address it. There are obviously things being done in every sector. I mean, in fairness to the agricultural sector, they have made changes to try and reduce carbon emissions and methane emissions. As regards transport, I mean, within the next 5 to 10 years, I'd imagine the vast majority of people will be driving hybrid, if not electric, cars. But we also need to start investing much more into alternative sources of energy for home heating. I mean, we're exposed to the Atlantic Ocean. We can start harnessing more wind, more wave energy, more tidal energy. Obviously, that takes an awful lot of investment, but as with hydroelectric power schemes over the past, when you invest in it, it's a large outgoing, but you do make it back over time. So there's no reason why we shouldn't be doing all of that. Climate change is real. You can't ignore it.
Do you think we have the infrastructure in Ireland to carry out the plans that are, I guess, quite aggressive for Ireland?
In terms of, I suppose, the electric car thing, the reality is, I mean, I would love to have an electric car, but I drive to work every day 50 kilometres. And the nearest charging point to me is about a mile and a half away from the place of work. And there's only one charging point in the town, so it's not practical at the moment. Mm. I mean, they are rolling out more, and I did see in the Climate Action Plan that car parks will have to be retrofitted, and that for every 5 spaces, 1 space will have to have an electric charging point. That obviously takes investments, and it will take a bit of time, but we have to do it. We've no choice. I mean, we can't. Nobody can ignore what's happening. And I mean, it will come to our door eventually. You can see what's happening in Australia. You can see what's happening in the Arctic. It will eventually come to our door as well, and we can't ignore it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree as well. Do you think that, given that I guess the top 100 companies in the world cause 70% of the emissions, that do you ever think why would Ireland bother? Because we don't produce that much on the grand scale.
Well, we do by the population. I mean, you know, we don't, we're a small country, only coming to 5 million people. So I suppose you can say we're only a drop in the ocean, but the ocean is made up of many drops. So I would say per head of population, we are producing a lot, and we have to address it. No country can ignore it, the same way as no individual can ignore it. It is an issue. It will have to be tackled at a global level as well as a local level. And I can see people changing their practices now as well. There are, you know, more people are using, you know, reusable cups and things like that. There's not but we need to do more solid things in terms of energy usage.
So small steps, but we need a bit more infrastructure.
You need it at both the local level and the national level and the global level. Everybody needs to play that part.
Now, has the insurance industry been fleecing us for years?
Yes.
in a word.
Yeah. Absolutely. I meet people all the time, and they're trying to get their children onto the insurance, and they're being charged phenomenal amounts of money. You hear people who are going for renewals, and it's up €400 or €500, but they might have a total clean license. I mean, it makes no sense. The with the childcare facilities and with supporting organisations, the community organisations, they are being charged. I would like to see the idea of a state company stepping in. I mean, local authorities at the moment, I mean, our own area, Cork County Council, they're all brought to the public bodies, Ireland, and I would like to see maybe a state company being established to try and look after community organisations.
Because a lot of community and social events have had to go to the wayside, really, due to the...
It's not acceptable like that.
Indeed.
Yeah, but of course, it's from both sides too. I mean, well, the reality is that some of the compensations being awarded by courts are just ridiculous. I mean, you read in the papers.
Yes.
I know there are only a selection of them that would be reported on. They are ridiculous.
But that's what the insurance companies are basing their figures on as well.
Crazy. I mean, and we've been talking about it. We've been talking for a long time that we have to direct judges to reduce the compensation, and it hasn't been done. And also, I mean, you look at the British model, which is probably better. If you are injured in an accident, then there is a much smaller compensation, and after that, your medical bills will be looked after. I mean, there's lots of people who seem to have accidents, get large compensation, but they no longer need medical treatment. And I would say, well, why don't we flip it and say you can have all your medical treatment for however long is needed? I'm sure it would reduce the amount of claims coming in.
Now, is there anything else that you would like to say?
No, of course, I'm not a TD at the moment. I would ask people to judge me on what I will do if I am elected a TD. I will be a strong advocate for people at their own family level, as a community level, and as a country. I mean, when I go around knocking on doors, I mean, I'm meeting people. It's always interesting. You knock on a door, you've no idea what the story is behind that door. You meet some very stressed families who are caring for them with specific needs, or with adults in particular, who parents who have dementia and Alzheimer's, and they're stressed. And I would love to be an advocate on behalf of people like that, on behalf of our communities that want to stand up and do it for themselves. So I won't leave people. I work very hard at it, but I need to be given the opportunity first. So I would ask people to consider me for a number one vote.
Padraig O'Driscoll, Fine Gael, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks very much.